This is Gay Adelman, and you're listening to Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS. In the studio with me today, I have
Karen Bennett,
Yvonne Rivera,
and our special guest tonight is Bruce Maples with Forward Kentucky. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Good to be with you.
Thank you. We're excited to have you here tonight. The music is still winding down, so we're going to get started. And the reason I wanted to have you on our show tonight, today, Bruce, is because Forward Kentucky has done such a really great job of election coverage as we headed into the election, and also with the follow-up. I loved the spreadsheet that you put out there for everybody to use and to download. And so I'd like to, we would like to ask you some of your takeaways from the election results, and we're going to spend the next hour really kind of digesting what that means for education and for Louisville and for Kentucky. So what were some of your big takeaways initially from the election itself?
Well, the turnout was higher. People were sort of wondering if it would break 50%. And the interesting thing was that it broke 50% in a number of counties. There's a map, I think it's on the Secretary of State's website. Anyway, there's a map that shows turnout by county. And in one county, it broke 60%.
Which county was that?
I believe it was Woodford, but I'm not sure. But it was in the 6th District, I remember that much. But by the same token, there were some counties where it barely broke 30% turnout. And so as a state, it was about 47, 48%, but about 44 counties went over 50%. So that's a strong midterm.
It is a strong midterm. I noticed one of the things that you pointed out on your analysis was the number of Democrats versus Republicans. And what we don't yet know is if Democrats voted Republican or like if they actually crossed their party line. But the turnout, the voter turnout was what you broke down in that spreadsheet.
Well, I used the votes as a surrogate. I sort of assumed that would be one thing you could do in this election because there was a lot of straight ticket voting on both sides, just a lot of it. So turnout was high.
I have a question about that, Bruce.
Yeah.
And that is, how I know that you can tell who's registered. You know, you can look that up. And I know you can tell if someone voted. How do you know that people voted straight ticket? I'm just curious.
Reports. Poll workers said they had a large number of people who voted straight ticket, more than normal, which could be... I know that when I went out door knocking the weekend before the election, I had a number of people. I would knock on the door and I'd start my spiel about the candidate I was walking for, which was Rob Walker. And they would they'd stop me and they'd say, Republican or Democrat? And I'd say, well, he's a Democrat in the race. Great, I'm voting straight down. You know, and that was the end of that.
But I heard, I guess, does that hurt candidates? Does that hurt when you just do the straight, you know, party?
I don't know that it hurts. No, I wouldn't say it hurts candidates. It indicates to me the increasing polarization of our country and our state, for that matter. So the turnout was one thing. Another thing that was interesting to me was a lot of people thought that the higher turnout meant that Democrats were going to win, which normally is what it means. But I was struck by the fact that I had somebody contact me on Saturday, I think it was. Might have been Saturday or Monday. And they said that the Republican headquarters in Frankfort, the parking lot was full of cars. And they assumed that they were doing a telephone bank or they were doing get-out-the-vote activities or something. I have suspected for a while that Republicans were doing a much better job of get-out-the-vote than we were. So that's one other takeaway.
Actual door knocking, though, like I never actually saw anyone from the Republican Party.
I'm not sure they use that much door knocking.
Direct mail calling,
or calling or texting,
okay.
Social media, whatever
yes.
the case may be. Another takeaway that I had was there were a number of pundits who wrote that apparently the Remember in November didn't really carry over. And if you look at the analysis I did, I think it actually did. I think that some Democrats, a lot of places, outperformed what they had done before. it just wasn't enough. And there were a number of races that were very close. We were much closer, even in some of the losses, we were much closer than we were 2 years ago, and even closer than 2016. A couple of other things. The women, we had a number of women emerge. Kentucky sent out a press release this morning that I put up on the website about how many people they had win out of their graduates. 27 women elected to seats that were emerged graduates.
That's fantastic.
Including 7 to the House. So women definitely made some difference here. I had another person, though, who said, I'm just not sure we can crack the rural-urban divide. I'm just not sure how we get these people out in these rural counties to vote Democratic. And I said, well, look around the country. Look at other states. It will happen here eventually. So I was somewhat discouraged election night, and then I got better as I started looking at more of the numbers and doing more analysis. We still have a ways to go, but overall, we didn't do the one thing that I really wanted us to do in the state, which was knock back the supermajority. I had hoped that we'd get them under 60, but we didn't do that.
We came close, and there's still a couple of races that are pending that could shift that.
Yes.
But probably not likely in our favor.
Right. There's a number of races that are down to single digits, and one of them is a Democratic loss that could go the other way. So, yeah.
You're not referring to Jim Glenn. That's a Democratic win
by
one vote.
No, I want to say it was Jeff Greer.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. Speaking of Jim Glenn's race, that to me was the most phenomenal. I take that back. Phil Moffitt's loss to Tina Bojanowski was the greatest victory for education Tuesday night. Would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
Phil was one of the ones.
One thing for our listeners who may not know, the charter school bill that passed was not the original charter school bill. The original charter school bill was truly, truly horrendous. And the father of that bill was none other than, can you remind me, Gay?
Phil the Prophet Moffitt. I should say Phil for Prophet Moffitt. He wanted to profit off of our charter schools. In fact, his name shows up on several organizations that have been filed with the Secretary of State. And who knows? I'm speculating.
Tina ran a great campaign.
She sure did.
I mean, she ran just a flawless campaign. And deserved to win based on the campaign she ran. And I was excited when I saw that she won. I have to say that one of the ones that surprised me the most was Maria Sorolis.
Yes, yes.
Beating Ken Fleming. I just was like, I mean, if you had asked me, I would have said, well, she's worked to death. She's run a great campaign. But look where it is.
Yes.
I just did not think she had a chance. And she beat him, and it wasn't close.
Right.
I mean, she beat him thoroughly.
Right.
So, good for Maria. I called her up and screamed into her voicemail for about a minute, telling her how excited I was for her.
That was definitely a victory for education as well. Ken was not one of the ones that was identified on the ALEC list. Phil was, as was
right.
The person that DJ Johnson, who Jim Glenn beat. And that was the race that was one vote.
One vote.
One vote. That's in Owensboro. So
you hear these apocryphal stories? Well, now there's a true one.
That's right. Don't ever let anyone tell you your vote doesn't count.
Well, I mean, the example I use for that is Matt Bevin winning the Republican primary. People forget that he won the Republican primary by 83 votes, which is less than one vote per county. So, yeah.
Get out and vote.
Your vote matters.
It does. It does indeed. And then there were actually 4 candidates who voted for charter schools in 2017. Ken was another one. So there were 4 total that were removed. Who was the 4th one? Does anybody remember? Does anybody have that list handy?
I do, but I'm not quite sure.
I had marked it on my printed piece. Tina, Maria Sorolis, Jim Glenn. Oh, and Cluster Howard replaced Toby Harold.
That's an interesting race because they basically swapped that office back and forth between the two of them.
Yep. That is interesting. And that was kind of a sleeper, I think, too. I don't think people expected that to happen.
Right.
So we have, but unfortunately we lost two people who voted with us. Dorsey Ridley was unseated by Robbie Mills, who is unfortunately on our ALEC list. Robbie came over from the House to run for Senate against Dorsey Ridley. So he is still one of the 15 that were in the article that you published that I had written for Forward Kentucky, where we identified 15 people that were currently running for re-election that were that had ties to ALEC, because those two that I mentioned have been replaced, Phil and DJ, DJ Johnson. We're down to 13. So we've made some progress, and we've also net positive in our favor, replaced charter school proponents with those who voted against it and or have made a commitment to vote against it in the future.
Right.
So we've definitely made some headway, and even some of the results that are not visible on an election night results screen is simply the progress that has been made in a legislature that was controlled by ALEC for the last 2 years. It was controlled by the House, the Senate, and the governor, all Republican, all really gung-ho on charter schools. And we didn't stop the charter school bill, but we definitely slowed it down. Voters did, and public pressure, and organizations like ours and our allies. And we slowed it down, and we prevented scholarship tax credits from passing. We prevented the funding of the charter school bill. And so now that we have more friendly legislators in the House, we have a better chance of keeping that momentum going. I don't think we can relax, though. I don't think we can take a breath. In fact, as we get closer to the end of the show, I'm going to be going through a calendar of events that are coming up, and there are some more threats already on the horizon. As early as tomorrow morning, there's a meeting in Frankfurt where the Charter School Advisory Committee is gathering, and they're going to be revisiting the charter school regulations. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
That was only announced yesterday. And the charter school regulations were developed under Pruitt and his cabinet, and they were very protective of Kentucky public schools. Even though we knew we were getting charter schools, they were written in a very comprehensive and well thought out way that would not be predatory on Kentucky's public schools. And with the new commissioner that's been selected by board members who were appointed by Bevin and who have a visible slant in favor of charter schools, I'm really worried about what they could do to our regulations.
I'm worried about that. I think that's a great catch on your part and certainly something we have to watch. And I don't know, I'm assuming that they can change the regulations without legislative approval. It's a board function or committee function. The other thing I'm concerned about, and I need probably to get more information on this to be sure I'm telling you the exact truth here, but I believe that even though it is a non-budget year, that the House can write funding bills in the non-budget year as long as they get 60 votes to pass them.
Correct.
And so they could theoretically fund charter schools in the coming legislative session.
They sure could.
And so that concerns me quite a bit as well.
And we might not even see it coming. In fact, if you recall, in 2017, the very last day of session, the charter school bill passed at 7:23 at night. And then they went across the hall to an appropriations committee meeting and voted to strip an existing bill and put in a funding mechanism for charter schools at 9:28 at night.
Right.
So you don't even know that that's the bill they intend to do something with, that they could be stripping out and replacing and not even doing second and third readings, as we've seen them do as well.
I just found the agenda for that meeting.
Okay.
So the meeting is in Frankfurt. It's 9 to noon, and they are discussing charter school student application, lottery, and enrollment, the evaluation of charter school authorizers, charter school appeal process, conversion charter school petition, conversions and operations is on their agenda.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, especially conversion charter schools.
Well, the fact that they have so much on their agenda looks to me like a rubber stamp. Because if you were really considering these things, you couldn't do them. between 9 and noon.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. So I think there's still a fight to be done. The other thing that frustrated me out of the election, like I said, the discussion about Remember in November didn't really take place, and I think it did. I think those people actually did go and vote. They certainly volunteered. A lot of campaign volunteers, a lot of hard work, a lot of teachers who ran, not all of whom who won, but a lot of them who ran. But the thing that got lost in the spring and didn't even come up in the campaigns in the fall was higher education. We have just done a horrible disservice to our universities and colleges. And there's a story that I was going to write, and then the election season came along and I put it off. But the amount of money that we lost in the state budget through the tax cut for the wealthy was about $500 million. And that amount of money is roughly enough to take higher education back to where it was in 1990. We could have taken that money and put it over here, and we would have funded our universities. Instead, we gave it away to wealthy people. So that's something that is on my mind. Quite a bit I'd like to see them talk about.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of universities, another thing that people need to be aware of and paying close attention to is, speaking of ALEC, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse, but ALEC and the Koch brothers have infiltrated a lot of our higher education institutions. And Wayne Lewis has been at UK. From what I understand from people who have worked with him at UK, they kind of pass in the hallway, but they don't really interact, because we've got our allies that are pro-public education, and then another subset of individuals that are kind of working to undermine education. And we've seen donations and grants and sponsorships of these institutions. It's public information, you know, the articles that have come out that have said that they're underwriting different curriculum. We need to be aware that there's a school of thought that is being indoctrinated in these institutions and funded.
The interesting thing about the Koch brothers, and let me make it plain that I have no sympathy for their economic philosophy. But what's interesting is that if you look at all of their philanthropic work, there's a lot of philanthropic work that they have done that is positive. They have given grants to hospitals. They have built facilities and so on and so forth. So I don't want to make it out like they themselves are the personification of evil, but their economic agenda is very clear. It's extreme libertarianism. And it's libertarianism that is so far outside even mainstream libertarianism.
Right.
Now, again, if they want to give money to U of L and they want to give money to UK and they want to, and they always do it as a free enterprise center, that's what they always call it.
Right.
If they want to give the money, I have no problem with them giving the money. I have no problem with them teaching the philosophy, as long as everybody knows that's where it's coming from, that's what we believe, we're promoting this, and then there's room for somebody to disagree or to present another side. That's what higher education is supposed to be about, is about exploring, you know, ideas. So I'm fine with that as long as it's named. What bothers me is when it's not named, when it's not clear that this is what this
is
about.
Right, if you have to mislead people to get your thoughts.
That always bothers me.
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to talk about the election?
Well, there are a lot of things that we should probably talk about the election. Some of the things, even at the national level, the biggest win for us nationally is that we now have balance of power in the House and the Senate.
Yes.
And there will be some interesting things. I've heard rumors that a lot of cabinet members are considering resignation. Have you heard anything along those lines yet? Simply because they don't want to undergo the intense scrutiny and even investigations that will take place.
I have not heard that. I have heard that there are a number of people who are considering leaving, partially because midterms is a good time to leave. I mean, if you sort of in your head said, I'll cope for 2 years, this is a good time to leave. I had not heard that about the scrutiny part. It wouldn't, for certain ones of them, it wouldn't surprise me.
The one in particular that I heard this about was Betsy DeVos, which definitely would not surprise me.
That would be interesting. my concern right at today, and today is Thursday, after the election on Tuesday, my concern today is that the Democrats don't get control until January.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this time between now and January, and what could happen will happen. The Sessions firing is very concerning. The person they're talking about putting in his place is very concerning. So yes, I was thrilled that we took the House. I mean, you know, if you've read the site, how concerned I was about that.
Yes.
The other thing, though, that I think that we need to point out is the demographic shifts. And people who are, in fact, I've got an article I'm thinking about writing about this, saying that, you know, Republicans need to understand that their time in Kentucky and Tennessee and Indiana is limited. Not limited in terms of days, but limited in terms of years. Because in the rest of the country, first of all, young people came out and voted more than they have.
Yes.
Young people overwhelmingly supported progressive values and progressive policies. Young people voted Democratic because of that in large numbers. In fact, the only cohort that overwhelmingly voted Republican across the country was over 60. And everybody under that either split pretty evenly, and the younger you get, the more Democratic they are. And then there was a study I saw just today, and I've got to go back and get the URL and make sure I file it, where they tracked people's party allegiances as they got older. So these were people that voted Democratic when they were 18 to 25 or 18 to 30 or something. And this is 15, 20 years later, and they're in their 30s and 40s. And in the past, as people have gotten older, they've moved to Republican.
Right.
That's just been common.
I think there's a Winston Churchill
quote. There is a Winston Churchill quote about that. If you're not a liberal when you're young, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative when you're old, you have no brain.
Yes.
You know. Well, so that's...
There's a version where it's attributed to De Gaulle, too.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say, it's that's a rumor that it was attributed to Churchill.
But that's been sort of the pattern. Well, they tracked these people, and it didn't hold. They were still progressive in their 40s.
My dad's 85, and he's as liberal as they come.
Yeah. So I think that what we have here is, as this country becomes more diverse, then you're going to see progressive values come more and more to the fore. Now, can we overplay that? Of course we can. And all politics are local. And so what fascinated me also was how some of these candidates basically were able to put forward a progressive message, and even when they tried to get slimed by the outside money with the advertising, they were able to overcome it with their message.
Right. Well, and I think we saw that in the mayor's race one day before the election, when Mayor Fisher was seen with an ex-felon, an accused criminal. He wasn't convicted criminal, he's an accused criminal, and the lead campaign tried to smear him for being seen with an ex-felon that had pending charges. Do you remember that story?
I do. I was so busy with some other things I didn't track it much.
Well, it backfired on him. It's because a lot of people were out there saying, okay, I thought we were innocent until proven guilty. I thought that, right. You know, I thought people deserve second chances. And someone who's paid their time, working, he's a barber, he has his own shop, he's contributing and participating in society. For them to try to smear him for being associated with someone that we're trying to advocate for backfires.
Yeah.
on those smear campaigns.
The other couple of trends that I read about and that people tracked nationally was that Democrats and progressives, for the most part, came out with a positive message. Very little negative against their opponent. You know, it was about, we deserve health care, we deserve good schools, we deserve clean water, we deserve clean air, we deserve, gays deserve full rights, and, you know, and basically they came forward with this positive message, and people were actually visiting websites and ads for candidates all across the country to see if it was a trend, and it was pretty much universal. Everybody was running on a positive message.
Yeah.
Nobody ran, as far as I know, on a stop Trump message, right? they ran on, we need a positive, we need to do better, we can do better, et cetera, things like that. Now, so what are you for, right? That's been the complaint with Democrats for a long time. It's been my complaint about Kentucky Democrats. You know, we're not them. Well, okay, that's great. What are you for? We're beginning to see Democrats pick up. What was interesting to me was how many people ran on health care and ran on Obamacare.
Right,
And unashamedly said, I support, you know, protection against pre-existing conditions and so on and so forth, which became a big thing. And the other thing that was fascinating to me, I think social media has harmed our culture a lot of ways. There's an interesting article that I read that talked about social media being a contributor to the despair across the country, which is an interesting theory we could pursue.
Well, it's kind of the modern day road rage.
Yes.
You know, we get in our little protected bubbles and
But the other thing that I thought was interesting was that you could answer campaign things so quickly. The Republicans tried to run on their tax cut. I'm talking about nationally, you know. And I mean, within 3 or 4 days of the talking points coming out, here came all these talking points in answer to them across social media, across Facebook and Twitter. Now, the problem with that, of course, is the bot problem, which is a real problem.
It really is.
But using social media intelligently, I will tell you what I think that we have not done well yet. I dare say you haven't done it well. I know I haven't done it well. I don't think Kentucky Democrats have done it well. I don't think campaigns, for the most part, did it well. And that is, use the channels that younger people use. My two sons, my older son, who is in his late 30s, is still on Facebook. My younger son, who's in his 20s, is not.
Right. I guess it's Instagram.
Instagram.
Yes.
Instagram.
Yep.
And I'm a verbal person, as you can tell. I don't get that. I don't know how to do it.
I know, I've tried, and I just can't get engaged.
I have an account that my daughter opened up for me and registered me, and I know that I'm following a few people.
Yeah.
And so if
we're going to reach those people,
we have to figure out where
their communication channel is. My younger son brings me Instagram things that he thinks are funny, right? He follows people who put up memes and stuff like this. And what was interesting to me was through the channels. Now, granted, both of my sons are both smart and very news conscious because of their father and their mother. But he would bring me things and he would come talk about issues. And he knew what was going on in the election. You know.
So Instagram's political now?
Oh, sure.
I live in a cave. I'm an old lady.
Well,
you have
see,
to tell
that's
me
I'm an
these
old
things.
Man, so there you go.
I mean, you can put your message on any of these platforms
right. And
political messages too.
I think the diversity thing is going to make a difference. And it made a difference in this election. Look at where people flip seats. We flip seats in urban areas that are more diverse.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's another couple of takeaways.
So to recap, and I just want to, for anyone who's just tuning in, you're listening to Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS. And in our studio today, we have Bruce Maples with Forward Kentucky, and we've been talking about Tuesday night's election results. And tonight's show is being a live broadcast from the Hayburn Building, downtown Louisville.
Woohoo!
It's Thursday night at 6:29 p.m. And so if you're listening to the replay of this program, which will be on Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. and Saturday morning at 7 a.m., some of the events that we are letting you know about, including the Charter School Advisory Committee meeting that's taking place in Frankfort tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., Friday morning at 9 a.m., will have already taken place by the time this broadcast re-airs. So visit SaveOurSchoolsKY.org or visit us on Facebook, Save Our Schools or Dear JCPS, just to get some of our takeaways after we watch. We're going to be watching the live stream of that meeting tomorrow morning and keeping an eye on what they try to do to our regulations, and we're a little bit concerned that they may try to open up some of the openings for the outsiders to get access to charter schools, to do their conversions, to what that lottery process looks like, what the authorizers are going to look like, because the regs were written under the prior commissioner's administration. And so a lot of things have changed in the recent months that we need to be keeping an eye on. So as I said, we've got Bruce Maples in the studio, and we're going to talk to him some more about the election results. And I want to encourage you to go to forwardky.com and look at, he's got a really great spreadsheet out there that you can download and play with. I did some of that this afternoon just because I wanted to kind of see where the education candidates landed and what kinds of wins we had. Overall, the takeaways from our group's perspective were that we had some good wins in Louisville and Lexington, the two urban populations that represent a more diverse demographic, as we were just talking about, including school board. We had three candidates that I'm aware of that were running for school board, two here in Louisville and one in Lexington, that had ties to charter schools. They were favoring charter schools on their platform, and we were able to keep all three of them from getting elected. Voters were able to do that.
Good.
So that's one less threat. In Fayette County, they just named a replacement school board member.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was appointed by the commissioner, and that person has been notorious pro-charter. So keeping that balance and making sure that they don't tip the scales to where they have more in favor of charters than in favor of public schools. See, this is the thing. Listeners may be hearing us, and we are so anti-charter when we come on and talk. There are a couple reasons for that. One is because the charter school bill that was passed was not designed for Kentucky. It's a cookie-cutter bill that was really designed by a group called ALEC, and it's created disasters for public schools in 44 other states, and we really don't need something like that in Kentucky. Kentucky led education reform in 1990, and we really need to be taking what we have that works and making it better, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater and going backwards the way that we've seen these other states do. But also just because even if you get charter schools in your state, public schools still serve 90-some-odd% of the population. And when our governor has made charter schools such a focus that he's replaced every single board member from the KBE with someone who has a leaning towards charter schools, and the majority,
and in some cases a vested interest.
Yes,
indeed. A vested financial interest.
Indeed. In fact, if you don't believe us, you can go check out some of the screenshots that we've collected from the Secretary of State's website on Dear JCPS's website under dearjcps.com/connect-the-dots, connect the dots, because there have been a number of board members that do have ties to the universities that we were talking about as well. So this is not the right bill for Kentucky. We don't need outsiders telling us what we need, but we also need to make sure that who's looking out for public schools. Like right now, I haven't seen any indication that public schools are a priority for any of the people that Bevin has appointed and for the commissioner that the new appointees have named. And even this meeting tomorrow is about charter schools. What are we doing to make sure that the 90% of students who still will be served by public schools have the funding and the resources and the supports and the tools and the teachers that they're going to need to be successful? I live in a community where I want my tax dollars to go toward the public schools, not to go toward charter schools that I have no ability, there's no transparency and accountability. And then they are often for-profit. They may be non-profit in their entity that runs them, but then they hire out an EMO that is a for-profit organization, oftentimes publicly traded, hedge fund manager portfolio type investment, which just really reeks of a lot of impropriety. And our state does not need that. We've had enough of that done to us across our history that you would think that we would be...
One of the things that... your listeners need to be aware of is some of the ethics bills and ethics challenges that are coming up. There is a court case underway right now challenging some of the ethics rules, and they've already done some changes where lobbyists can give gifts to legislators, and can give donations to campaigns, I think. I think I need to go back and check that. But basically, there's some court cases where they're trying to change that. And as one person, at least, I think it was Jim Wayne, wrote an op-ed about this and said he remembered when he first went to Frankfurt and got his wallet out to pay for lunch, and the two legislators he was with just laughed and said, no, 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 you don't pay for anything in Frankfurt. The lobbyists pay for everything. And that was the environment that he started serving in. And, of course, right after that, we had BOPTROT. And everybody who's a listener of yours who doesn't know what BOPTROT is needs to go to Wikipedia and look it up. I worry that we're headed back there. So, yes, there's one of the things that strikes you if you ever work in Frankfurt or if you work with people who work in Frankfurt is that there is just a lot of money. There's a lot of money that comes out of Frankfurt. And it's very tempting to some people to say, how can I get my slice of that?
Yeah.
And the biggest part of the budget is schools.
Yes.
And so if you're going to say, well, where do I get my slice, you want to get your slice out of the biggest pie. So we have to be doubly careful with corruption around public education. And not just charter schools, but all sorts of different ways that there can be corruption there.
Absolutely. So, and we were kind of summarizing the election results locally in Louisville and Lexington. As we mentioned, we had some nice wins. At the state level, we didn't do so well, in education anyway. But nationally, again, we had some positives.
I have a question.
Yes.
For both Gay and Bruce, because they're the smart people. I've already admitted to being an old lady, so of course I live in a cloud with rainbows and unicorns. But I really, really thought that we'd flip the house. And the reason I thought that is all those teachers who went to Frankfurt, 13,000. And I thought back to the counties some of them came from, where the number one employer is the school district.
Yes.
And I figured, surely they would turn out in mass and run the little dirtbags off.
Well, okay, so...
what happened?
So let's assume, for the sake of argument, let's assume that your 10,000-person number is correct. Let's assume that all of them...
I was there, I counted them.
Okay.
It's correct.
Let's assume that all of them voted...
I went with 13, but hey.
Let's assume that all of them voted Democratic.
Yeah, because I vote more on the inside, right?
Let's assume that for just a moment.
Yes.
Which is not true, but let's assume it. You've got 100 House seats. Already, if you divide them evenly, you're down to how many per House seat? 100. Right? I mean, if every one of them went back and voted Democratic, they would have made a difference of 100 per race. And when you have races that were lost by 2,000 votes or 3,000 votes, every one of them could have gone back and done exactly what you said, and it wouldn't have been enough. Now, which is why I disagree with the people who are saying that it all petered out. I don't think it did. I think it made a difference.
I do too.
I just don't think it made enough difference in enough districts.
No, but what I was thinking is even people who didn't go, if I work for the school district, I know who the enemy is. It's charters and people voting to cut schools.
But
they don't think they're coming to the rural communities.
Well, but there's another thing.
And I want to talk some more about that.
The bill that finally did pass, the sewer bill, not the sewer bill, the budget bill, they put in funding. They increased funding for the SEEK formula. They, in their pension bill, they took care of current teachers.
Yes.
And
enough to calm them down.
Right.
Yes.
And they played it that way. And you and I, Gay, talked about the fact that a certain group of people in the state got played by that, who came out and, you know, supported it when I thought they should have raised all sorts of sand, even if it was better. So that's one thing that happened. The other thing that happened that we do not, that I don't think we have named enough, is the outside money that came into Kentucky that was spent very targeted on certain vulnerable Republicans to do ugly mailers on their opponents.
Yes.
And I got some of them. I mean, in my district was not one that I think they were necessarily targeting a lot. There were some of these rural districts where you had a Republican who raised some money, but you had outside groups spending on behalf of that Republican, and nobody's spending on behalf of the Democrat. And you're talking about a Democrat who maybe did one mailer or two, and Republicans who did six or seven, and five of them were negative about the Democrat. The Republican Party of Kentucky figured out a message that would work for them. They used that message over and over and over again, and that made some difference. That was part of what happened. Now, you're talking about Tina Bojanowski flipping Moffitt's seat.
Yes.
One of the things that we don't like to talk about, because we're all about collaboration and so on and so forth, Tina raised money.
Yes, she did.
I mean, she raised money, you know? And bless her heart, she used it well. And there were some races where the Democrat reported $3,000, $4,000 on their financial report, and the Republican reported $20,000, $30,000. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that we don't want to talk about on the progressive side, but it's the truth. And you've got wealthy people and wealthy PACs outside the state who are sending money in. Now, the Republicans love to talk about George Soros, you know, funding all of this progressive stuff.
Yes, a foreign-born Jew.
Yeah.
Just a coincidence, I'm sure.
But I guarantee you, George Soros didn't send any of our Democratic candidates any money, you know? I mean, that's another thing that made a difference.
Right.
So yes, I think they did go back. I think they did remember in November. But you are going against a structural problem in Kentucky where the rural areas have gone from being solidly Democratic. There, the west end of the state for decades was solid Democrat.
I remember.
It's now solid. There is not one Democratic legislator west of Henderson. It's gone solidly red.
Well, I think there's a lot of one-issue voters out there, and education may be number two, but they put abortion or, you know, I saw a lot of posts where people say, I simply cannot vote for a Democrat because they don't go to church, you know,
right.
Or some misnomer, misbelief about.
Well, you're dealing with people.
But they put that issue above education, even though we got all those teachers out in droves. If that's their number two concern and they put something else number one, then. Even though abortion isn't really decided at the state level. I mean, it can certainly be affected, but that is really a national. You should not elect your legislators based on a belief that's more of a religious foundation because they can't affect that locally as much.
But that's what's going to, that's what, one of the things you're dealing with. You're dealing with religious
ideology
about Democrats. You're dealing, in some cases, notice I didn't say many, but in some cases you're dealing with race. In some cases you're dealing with feelings about gays. In some cases you are dealing occasionally
again,
with fiscal, about taxes,
right.
And whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But basically, what group are we part of, who's my tribe, has changed, right?
Right.
The tribe is the Republicans. The tribe used to be the Democrats.
Right.
But the interesting thing, and this is, I still believe this, most of the things that I just named, God, guns, and gays, remember,
mm-hmm.
Barry Craig loves to talk about the God, guns, and gays issue. He made the point that younger people don't care about any of that.
Nope, they don't.
They're fine with gays. They see through the gun lobby stuff, and some of them are, you know, survivors of school shootings and so on and so
right.
forth. And so they really see through it. And then as much as we might want to believe differently, some of them are not in the same religious space that their parents are.
Right.
And so it will eventually become less powerful to talk about God, guns, and gays. Now, the issue that I still believe that progressives should be just hammering on is healthcare and rights for people,
mm-hmm.
you know. Those are the things that people care about, and Social Security, Medicare, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have not given up on the fact that Democrats can do well in Kentucky. I just think it's harder here than in other places. But if Texas is going purple,
yes,
you know, we shouldn't lose hope.
No.
Well, and something else that backs up what you said that I just thought of now, you know, if God, guns, and gays were enough to get people to vote Republican, then Donald Trump wouldn't have to be eschewing BS about a caravan.
He's
hammering immigration because God, guns, and gays are no longer enough.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. I think it is a mix of a whole bunch of different things that somebody wrote this morning that it took the Republicans 30 or 40 years to come back from the dead, which was under the Goldwater laws. And they figured out a message that worked for them, and they kept at it. And I don't like their message, you know, obviously. But I have to say, they figured out how to get these people to be in their camp. And so we have to figure out how we get people to be in our camp.
Yes.
And we have to figure out a message that resonates.
Well, and this might be a good time to remind our listeners that Save Our Schools is actually a bipartisan organization. And even some of the culprits across the nation that have been pushing charter schools have been the Democrats. So this is not uniquely Democrats versus Republican issue. It has become that way here in Kentucky specifically because of how the votes were split and how people were siding and voting straight party with their governor, basically, when they were pushing this charter school bill through. But one of the victories from Tuesday night that I think we need to focus on is the fact that, KSBA, the Kentucky School Board Association, published a list of House versus Republicans versus Democrats, and we know it was 61-39, although some of those numbers are still tentative. They could slightly change, but we did not take back the Democrats. I should say the Democrats, because it's not we versus them. It's, from our perspective, it's pro-public education candidates versus non-public education candidates. And the supermajority matters if they're going to continue to vote party line. But my point, in a roundabout way of getting around to it, is this KSBA graphic that they published that shows the number of teachers that are actually now serving in the House. There's 14 of them. And 7 of them are Republican and 7 of them are Democrat. So we actually have a really good chance of having some common sense legislation at least introduced in the House. It may not go very far if we can't get it through the Senate, but at the same time, we may be able to prevent things from just being railroaded through like they were the last 2 years.
Well, let me say something about that, because I may have given a wrong impression in some of my comments here. Former Kentucky is a progressive website. I mean, it's right there in the top of the website.
Right.
People have asked me, so is it partisan? Well, it's partisan primarily because the only people I've seen who are progressive as a rule are Democrats.
Exactly.
However, we push progressive policy. That's what we care about.
Right.
Is instituting progressive policy. And one of the things that I want to do in January is start a new podcast called Commonwealth Conversations. And what I want to do on there is have a Democrat and a Republican, and we bring up an issue and say, okay, let's work it.
Yes.
You know, let's talk about it. I will stand with anybody who supports progressive values.
Exactly.
And so if you're a Republican and you support public schools, I'm there with you on public schools.
Yeah.
If you're a Democrat and you support charter schools, I'm not happy. You know, it's progressive issues and progressive values are what we're trying to push.
Right.
And just for those who don't know, what Gay was referring to is Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, is a Democrat, and he is one of the worst charter school supporters.
Well, and he's
closed 50 public schools at a time.
They don't have a democratically elected school board like we have here in Louisville. So that is another reason why there's a big push to remove our school boards, to let a mayor or a governor have say over, in fact, that was the major goal of the state takeover threat that we just faced in Jefferson County, was to have the governor be able to have his commissioner basically be the board.
Are we referring to education czar Wayne Lewis?
Yes, we are. So the and these are all plays from the ALEC playbook. So they come in and they get into these districts and they go, they come at us from a million different angles. And SBDMs is something that is unique to Kentucky, but that's another angle that they're going after right now.
And that's another meeting that they're
having. Another meeting we're going to talk about. Yeah.
Just a minute, Gabe. Will you explain, you or Karen, explain SBDMs for those who don't know?
Yes. SBDM came from CARA. It stands for Site-Based Decision Making, and it's basically a way to engage the local invested community in the running of the schools. So the SBDM Council is elected, and they have say over the budget. They have say over hiring. They get to pick a principal. There's a lot of really great things that are done at the school level that these organizations, including BIPs, we talked about BIPs on prior shows. I don't think we talked much about them today. But Jim Waters has ties to Phil Moffitt, which is one of the reasons why we were really glad that Phil was removed, because BIPs has been here since 2003. It's funded
and that's the Bluegrass
Institute for Public Policy Solutions.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you. They're funded by State Policy Network, which is another Koch organization. Like the ties and the connections to this intentional undermining of public education to bring in quote unquote solutions from privatizers is pretty well documented, and we have to protect the things that work here in Kentucky. And site-based decision-making councils is one of those things that work. They're not perfect, and if you have a SBDM that is not engaged, or a principal who might be trying to sweep some things under the rug, or various combinations like that, then there's room for improvement. But that doesn't mean you throw it all out just because somebody can't get their online charter school bill passed or whatever. In fact, I want to talk about that. That's another story that just came out, is that Wayne Lewis has said that he's coming after the rural schools. He has a quote out that says, "Now is the time to break down educational barriers in Kentucky's rural schools." And you know that they just came out with that TSI and CSI report that listed nearly half of Kentucky's schools as needing assistance, either state takeover or state
the
assistance.
Term they would use is failing, I'm sure.
Yes, well, it's the new priority school, basically. And so a lot of rural districts are surprised to see their schools on these lists, if they're even paying attention at all. They may not be aware. But that was setting the stage for targeting the schools in these rural communities, and now he's coming out and saying that we need to break down these educational barriers, and his solution is to bring in more online courses. And the worry about that is that there are organizations like K-12 that are lobbying here in our state, and they will stand to benefit and profit from these online solutions if and when they're implemented. This is not being driven by the need at the school level. If it was, a site-based decision-making council could certainly implement that at any given time. But this is being driven from the top down by outsiders pushing in.
Let me add something about the Koch brothers, so that people don't think we're conspiracy theory crazies. The Koch brothers are worth $104 billion. They are the sixth richest people on this planet. So millions of dollars for them is nothing. How nothing is it? $10 million, which you think, man, that's some money, is 1/100,000 of their wealth.
Like a stamp.
It's, if you make $30,000, it's the equivalent of 30 cents to you. So $10 million to them is literally chump change.
Yep.
It's 30 cents to a person making 30 grand. So for them to, you know, for them to throw $4 and $5 million at something.
And there's potential return in it. It's an investment that they're making. They will see the money on the other side.
Exactly. For the price, for less than the price of a stamp. You're right.
Yeah.
The online schools,
yes,
that really needs to be discussed and talked about. There is a place for online learning, no doubt, but you're talking about some rural areas where they don't have even semi-reliable internet, and I struggle with thinking that that's going to be a good solution for them, particularly when we're not funding our regular schools like
right.
we should be,
right.
Which is ridiculous. There's one other thing about this election that's not a school issue, but I want to call it out because we have statewide elections next year. One of the big stories in this year's election across the country has been voter suppression. We see it going on right now in Georgia and Florida. There's some real problems there. There were some problems in other states, but those are the two big ones. We are fortunate that we have a Secretary of State who takes that very seriously.
Yes.
And has worked hard to make sure that we have fair elections and open elections. I know she would like to see us do early voting, which we can't seem to get past. But we need to be careful about our Secretary of State election next year because she's not running. You know, she's term limited.
I saw somebody's already filed.
Well, there are people already filing, yes. We need to be careful about electing somebody that we know is going to protect access to the ballot and protect rights of people to vote. So
Absolutely.
That's something to be aware of.
I think that should be one of our nationwide, you know, for Democrats, nationwide should be their motto is, we believe in democracy.
So we found the, agreed, Yvonne, I agree with you. We're running out of time on our show, so I want to make sure we cover a couple of things for our listeners before we go. We found the meeting announcement for the Joint Education Committee meeting that's taking place on November 19th at 1 p.m. in room 154 of the Capitol Annex building in Frankfort. And the tentative agenda includes a discussion on site-based decision-making councils and a presentation on proposed statewide academic standards for social studies. So I want to point out that one of the key words there was tentative agenda. It stands to reason that if they get enough calls from concerned stakeholders that say, why are you talking about our SBDMs again? They did this last summer as well. They held a hearing and tried to, and BIPs testified, and they tried to undermine our SBDMs because of a situation in Boone County where they couldn't get an online course introduced in that school district. And they were mad at the SBDM for saying no, and so then they tried to say SBDMs should go away and make their case as to why SBDMs are bad. And it sounds like this is coming up again, and since it still says it's a tentative agenda item, perhaps we can encourage them to talk about something else. And then also the academic standards for social studies is just something that we should keep an eye on. It'll be interesting to watch how that pans out. And then also the JCPS is doing their community hearings on student assignment. They have been, one of the requirements with their compromise with the state is that they must come up with a new student assignment plan, and they're conducting four separate community hearings. Tonight was one of them, tonight being Thursday night, since we're recording this live. Then, Karen, do you have the others?
I do. Tonight was at 8, at 7 p.m. There's another one.
Oh, you could still make it. Hurry. Yes. Tell them where.
Let's see.
We're zooming in.
Tonight is at Southern High School. Then we have November 10th. That one is at 1 p.m.
That's a Saturday?
Yes, it's a Saturday.
We're still going.
At Central High School, November 12th at 7 p.m., that one at Valley, November 14th at 7, and that's at Ballard.
And we want to thank you, Bruce, for joining us for this edition of Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS. And this is Gay Adelman, and we've had Yvonne Rivera,
yes,
and Karen Bennett with us tonight, and we will catch you again next week. Thank you for joining us.